Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here.
And Mike Costantino is over here.
And we have two guests today, and our main guest is a lawyer who's been involved in a whole lot of very, very important cases. Mick Jordahl.
There you go.
I was counting on you having that.
I had it, but I forgot you were in charge here, Steve.
I was up late last night, really? Mike. I can't help these things.
This isn't unusual. Besides having an unusual name, this is an unusual guy. This is an attorney that does good stuff.
This is the one. He's one of the main litigators and involved in a whole bunch of the most important civil liberties, civil rights, city rights legislation in Arizona. So you want to just sort of introduce yourself?
So how much do I have to pay you for this?
It's free. It's free,
you'll
Nick.
Be billed. We should introduce Klaus here, too. Please.
Yeah, we'll get around to introducing Klaus. And we have here Klaus von Stutterheim.
Good morning.
That's right. Returned.
Yeah, returned. Klaus is our secret weapon.
Participating
in the show pretty regularly and then became ill, and welcome back.
Thanks. Good to be back.
So, Mick, what your focus is on freedom of the speech and that kind of issues. That's your focus on is preserving freedom of speech, American civil rights?
Well, I love living in America. I mean, I've traveled abroad extensively, and I've seen other systems, you know, where people get locked up for just saying a bad word about, you know, their king or whatever. I was in Vietnam last month for a bit, and there was a lady that got basically, she held up an anti-Trump sign when he came to Hanoi. And I was there a few days before that. Yeah. And the next day she lost her housing. She lost her job. And she was only photographed. She posted a sign of herself there for a brief while, and she lost it all. So, I mean, there are countries like that. And that's probably the majority of countries.
So whether they like Trump or not, you can't interfere with the establishment's decision.
I have to slip it in here. Yeah. The guy that was on that sign is really happy about her losing her house and her job. And that's different than any other American leader we've ever had.
Yeah, I would think. But crazy times we live in.
Since Mussolini. I forgot he wasn't of this country.
One reason I wanted to talk to Mick was that when I was young, that the law was very important. Supreme Court was very important. When we participated in civil rights demonstrations, we thought the federal government and the American legal system sort of had our back. It was a very iffy process because the FBI would watch people get beat up and not do anything. But overall, they were certainly better than a lot of the other folks. Is the law still be able to deliver for American people free speech and civil rights? And is it still a counterbalance to bad legislation?
Well, I think it certainly can be. And we can talk about some of the cases that I've been involved in Arizona. But, I mean, nationally, with the U.S. Supreme Court, if anybody thinks elections are not important, all they have to do is look at the Supreme Court these days and some of the probably worst decisions in 100 years. Well, I'm thinking of, election, the Citizens United case about corporations and money and politics, that type of thing is just horrendous. But, you know, you can still use the law in ways that preserve our Bill of Rights. And what I was saying about loving this country, it's not just the First Amendment. It's all the Bill of Rights. We're a unique country, and if you love freedom, you know, you're going to be using, the Bill of Rights. And the boundaries of the Bill of Rights are fought out in courts every day. And we see what is the extent of speech? What is the extent of privacy? What about due process?
Well, that's an excellent way to look at that. The boundaries of the Bill of Rights are being fought in court every day. I may have that tattooed on my forehead. That people take both sides take the Bill of Rights for granted.
Right.
And one of the things you talked about before the show was the level of discourse. And Steve counts on me for this, mm-hmm. I like to think, and bothers him at the same time. Have gone over where my level of discourse has gotten down to theirs, where I find nothing funny or mm-hmm. humorous about what's happening now,
yeah.
about the Supreme Court being becoming this backward. As Steve was starting to say, that this, many of us saw the Supreme Court and law as a savior, as the final stop to a crazy Republican legislature. We saw the Supreme Courts and the federal courts as a final buffer against a crazy executive branch, mm-hmm. which is what we have now. And you're saying, yeah, it can be, but elections have consequences.
Yeah, and, when I talk about the Bill of Rights being fought out every day, it's not only on the left, it's also on the right. And there's some great legal foundations on the right that do just incredible work. I don't necessarily agree with it,
right.
But I'm just saying one is like the Goldwater Institute. They've taken on libertarian issues. It's like the right of a tattoo parlor to exist in Scottsdale, things like that. I don't know if you want to segue into something.
I'd say, Mick, that Mike and I think most of us feel that there's been an undercutting of American democracy. And so
yeah.
the courts are certainly become more of a focus for us because we don't we see a decline in American democracy in a whole lot of ways in the media and everywhere else. And so we come to you and say courts can still deliver on issues. Let's take one of the things that you fought about or went to court about. You were part of a co-counsel on the federal case that overturned Arizona's same-sex marriage law.
Right, right.
Banning same-sex marriage.
Yeah, actually, the way I got involved was a case before that, a few years earlier. It was I represented a gay woman in it was a child custody dispute. And the woman that I represented won sort of a Mom of the Year award from a school, but she wasn't biologically related to her daughter, and she couldn't adopt legally. So basically we went up to the Court of Appeals and unfortunately, did not get a good ruling there, went back to the trial court and she basically lost her contact with her daughter. She had almost no rights. So that really, I think I understood intellectually, what a difficult thing it was for gay people, gay parents, but that really hit my heart, and then when an opportunity came up to get involved in fighting the same-sex marriage ban in Arizona, and that was basically a good friend of mine, Ryan Stevens, was the attorney up in Flagstaff. We flew out to Los Angeles and met with Lambda Legal out there, and then we teamed up with another great law firm in Phoenix, the Aiken. Sean Aiken and company, and they had just filed, and so we joined their suit, and there were about six of us, and some of the politics were pretty interesting because there were gay rights organizations in the state that were very against litigating. They wanted to have a referendum, that type of thing. They wanted to wait, but we went ahead, and there was a whole landslide across the country at that time, and that's an issue where the Supreme Court came through, and in a 5-4 decision, so it happens. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court is so politicized; you get all these 5-4 decisions, and that shows you that politics are involved, whether it's left, right, or whatever. It'd be nice to have people just dispassionately look at the law and see what the rights are.
Yeah, so, I had a friend in that situation, and her significant other moved out of state, and then she had no legal rights to be a mother. and put her in a difficult situation. And, of course, in New York City, we saw with the AIDS epidemic, the kind of treatment that gay folks got there. They had no right to stay in the apartment they were in.
Or hospital access.
A guy and his partner died. His partner's parents came, locked the apartment up, burned everything they could get their hands on in the apartment. He lost everything he had. He had no legal rights at all. So we've seen some improvement from the law in various different ways. So how did this lead to the other case you were involved with on same-sex marriage?
Well, like I was saying, I was very interested in that issue after the case where, you know, unfortunately my client lost most of her rights. I mean, she had very limited visitation. And even that was cut off. So, and she was a great mom. She really was.
So we're talking to Mick Jordahl, Flagstaff lawyer, safe
no,
to say?
No, here.
Right here in Sedona.
Yep.
All right, local
right here.
And we want to, I want you to continue your story, but, the fascinating parts of the law are what we're talking about this morning, where a lot of our rights disappear and where a lot of our rights come from.
Right. And so you fought for same-sex marriage, which without it or something like that, then it was what I saw personally when I lived in New York was a much more extensive denial of rights than would seem by just repeating the phrase. So tell us about other cases. You have two other main cases, again, that you were involved in, litigating. You were, you were involved in Flagstaff Living Wage Coalition versus the state of Arizona.
Yeah.
Lead attorney overturned the Arizona law prohibiting citizens and cities' initiatives from adopting their own minimum wage ordinances.
Yeah, that was a fun one. I really enjoyed that. I had some friends in Flagstaff who were very interested in promoting a higher minimum wage in Flagstaff locally.
Like Seattle has done.
And they were inhibited from doing that or prevented from doing that because there was a state law preempting the area. Preemption means the state comes in, the legislature comes in and says, this is an area of statewide concern, so we're going to shut you down, cities. You can't do anything. Well, there was one major flaw is that before the law was adopted, there was another act that was passed by referendum called the Voter Protection Act. And it said the legislature can't overturn something that has been voted on by the people. And there was a minimum wage law, a state minimum wage law passed years earlier that said localities could set their own wages if it was higher. And so... You know, it was a great case because first, and we're talking about activism and the law. Well, this is a group that was forming and they wanted to see their way to, you know, creating a higher minimum wage in Flagstaff. And they couldn't do it without the litigation first.
I think people hear, the Republicans and Libertarians particularly talking about, rights from the federal government. But they almost entirely side with the state government against local and county governments, don't they? They believe that it's the fundamental power, the state government.
Yeah, it's just a raw power grab, I think. And that's where democracy is defeated. And it's a way of shutting down the conversation. And that's what you're seeing more and more is the shutting down of conversations in these years. You know, preemption is a big thing.
Well, there's a change. It's such a change for exactly, you know, where they had their own law. They contradicted themselves with the law of saying that cities can't pass their own minimum wage laws because they had a law on their own books, on the state books, that said they can. So that's what made it a great case, is you had
I mean, it was actually pretty easy, you know.
Yeah.
We just filed, and the attorney general, I mean, he was scratching his head, I think, probably, and, you know, said, hey, you're right. Yeah. So.
Well, now, the state does very, very strange things and passes very strange laws, like the banning of cities from being able to banning cities from being able to ban plastic bags.
Yeah, exactly.
It's this kind of thing that drives Mike and I nuts, you know.
Right. Yeah, and you know, every city has, say, a different tax rate, a different local tax rate. And if plastic bags can't be regulated by cities, why are taxes any different? And so it's just crazy. It's when you go down to the legislature, it's just basically.
When are you going to take up the plastic bag ban?
Well, I have talked with some people about that.
Really?
But I don't think that's one I'm going to pass on.
Standing. Well, the erosion of local control, and you don't have to spend 2 minutes in a school to see one of the clear cases of the erosion of local control. When you have these state ideologues that get into office, the Goldwater Institute we mentioned at some point, supposedly, at least we think of all of the terrible things they might do, at least they're going to be for, because they have a kind of a libertarian bent, they're going to be for local control, Republicans.
Or libertarian type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But they're not.
As terrible as they are.
Some are, some aren't.
Would be for local control, and we just see this whole erosion of local control, both municipalities and school districts.
Conservatives decided, I think, a long time ago that their best shot at controlling the United States was to control state legislatures, and that cities and towns, particularly cities that say in a very conservative state like Utah, I think Salt Lake City is Democratic, saw a way to control cities and a large part of their population through the emphasis of on states' rights and state power, and that was where they could influence legislation most. Let's take up one more case.
Well, did the lady, by the way, ever get her? So here we are, Mom of the Year.
Yeah,
and she can't see her child.
Well, she just ended up giving up hope and ended up moving back to Wisconsin because the other couple ended up moving out of state.
Right. That happened to my friend, but they were able to work things out with her ex-partner. But her partner moved a long way away, and then they sort of informally share custody, but she has no legal rights.
Right. Well, this other couple moved to Utah, and the protections there weren't so good. Yeah. And I just felt so bad because we were just 5-6 years shy of being able to have same-sex marriage and then have the rights that flow from that. So.
When you see the things personally, it's like watching the AIDS epidemic and the fact that people didn't have a right to go see their partner in the hospital. And when you know people are in that situation, it has much more impact than if you read about it sort of abstractly. Let's take up another thing you did, which is you overturned the state law banning peaceful begging.
Yeah.
Helped overturn it, I would say.
Yeah, well, it was a very interesting case, and I teamed up with Arizona ACLU, and I've been a cooperating counsel with them on a couple of different occasions. And basically, I had she was a 44-year-old Hopi lady that was one morning, she was on the south side of Flagstaff, and she asked for a dollar, ostensibly for bus fare. From someone, that person turned out to be an undercover police officer. And so because of this, they arrested her, and it was a law called loitering to beg. And she was entirely peaceful, not intoxicated. I don't know whether she was going to use that dollar towards a beer or towards bus fare, but the thing is it was peaceful speech.
Right.
And so we filed suit in federal court, and and
so
it was struck down.
Of speech issue.
Yeah, it was a speech issue. Yeah, and I mean, what's really fascinating now because is to see the change in demographics. I was talking to one of the Flagstaff police higher ups the other day at a conference, and he was saying, yeah, did you notice the change in demographics after that law was struck down? And I said, yes, I did. And before it was basically, it was poor native folks in Flagstaff that might be begging. Now it's like see a lot more people, and they're not necessarily homeless. They're usually white folks. And, there's a concern is like about that. It's a societal problem, and I don't, sometimes I have second thoughts about that case. It was the right thing to do for speech, but it just opened this sort of floodgate.
And you wonder, I mean, for someone who lived in New York, I saw beggars and gave money to beggars for years and years, and I look at some of the guys who hang around Sedona, and I don't give them anything, because
I don't either.
I'm very skeptical, Mick. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And, I know it's my ungenerous side, but, right. you know, I mean, I'm used to guys with sunburned hands and faces
yeah.
and who are out living in the street. And when I see some right. guy who's perfectly healthy and young, and
yeah.
then I'm skeptical. And I
although
I
it's like
that's a good thing. What do you think, Mike? I mean,
yeah,
is that
sure.
a good thing or a bad thing?
I mean, it's a good thing. I'm sorry. It's a good thing. Yeah. But the final announcement, when I see it, if you live in Cottonwood, you see at Fry's, you see they try to explain themselves on their sign because of the law. You know, what their story is or what their situation is. And the same thing at Safeway, you know, at the supermarkets, there's a lady there with a, and she'll tell you her story so you can feel better about giving, if not this time, the next time. Mm-hmm. You know, so the, her freedom of speech is expressed in that she can tell her story and whether or not you feel like giving, that's fine, but she peacefully tells her story. Which is not what we're talking about, the guys that drove up or the guy that's got a day off of his construction job and decides to add to his income with a little begging. That's maybe not the intent of...
Yeah, I mean, there is a law, and this is perfectly constitutional, and I support it. It's called aggressive panhandling, essentially. And
right.
It that is a very bad thing.
I ran well, I into say, that in New York. I had a guy yeah. follow me for two or three blocks. I gave yeah. him some money, and he... followed me demanding more money. And it put a real crimp in my you know, I used to walk home late at night from my bartending job, and there would be just dozens of beggars, and I'd
yeah,
maul
right,
a little
right.
bit of money. And I gave this guy a little bit of money. He followed me for blocks, threatening me. I thought, whoa, Mick, that's not free speech.
Talk
that's
about
just,
it.
No.
You just look like
yeah.
such a target,
Stephen.
I'd follow you and ask you for money.
Yeah, really.
They complained they were removed from the shopping centers I'm talking about in Cottonwood.
Right.
And then somebody who knew the law said, in this case I'm pretty sure it was the mayor, said, no, police can't do that. And so they were reinstalled and under the guidelines that were.
Well, there are private property owners have every right to trespass people, and that's what they do, and they can give authority to police departments, and there are programs called the Safe Shopper Program, and I fully support that.
They were a long way
to say
the door.
You gotta stay out of our property.
Yeah, here. Right.
You know, even
you certainly
if,
wouldn't want
yeah.
people hitting you up for money in the supermarket or something.
They were on yeah, the public right away, right, just to be clear.
But I mean, back to the lawsuit here.
Yes.
You know, you had all kinds of people that would be soliciting. You know, it might be Girl Scouts, it might be you know the bell ringers or whatever for Salvation Army, and then you have people that are begging for you know extra income too. So. There is also an issue of fraudulent begging. You know, there are people I have heard of, and I haven't seen it, but I from very trusted sources, saying there's a guy hooked up to an oxygen bottle, you know, and he's got this thing in his nose, and, well, the tube isn't attached.
You're right.
You know,
I, yeah. we've all
you know.
Seen it all.
I see.
Or
okay.
the baby
I'm
carriage with a doll in it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
Yes, we had
to
all
my old
that.
Age. I'm writing this down.
I guess for me, it and you know, you would see this guy with a bright red nose, and you know where your money was going. And
right.
Somebody asked me about it. I said, well, you know, you either decide to give the guy the money, and once you give it to him, it's his money, right?
That's yep.
It. If he wants to spend it on booze, he spends it on booze.
Right.
You decide whether you give it to him or not. He decides mm-hmm. how he spends it. You don't have any claim on how he spends his money.
Well, yeah, you're right. And I think what this lawsuit and the striking down of the law, loitering to beg, it just pointed out a huge societal problem.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that was part of my initial motivation also is like we can't jail homelessness away. We can't push it out of our mind. You know, the approach is not to jail it. But then what's interesting is, okay, who comes out then?
Yeah.
It's not necessarily homeless folks. So.
You're involved in what's a major case now. And there's an article about it in, let me get the date right, December 7th in the Arizona Republic. Mm-hmm. And Mick is right in the middle of this. ACLU sues Arizona over law barring boycotts of Israel. Tell us about that suit because you are named over and over again.
Yeah.
as the... as not only the legally involved, but also the protester.
Yeah. Basically, the state legislature was last year told, and this is like a preemption thing, this is also shutting down conversation in my mind. Legislature adopted a law saying that no city, no town, no county, nor the state can contract with anyone providing services or goods if they're a supporter of the boycott of, even a limited boycott of the illegal settlements on the West Bank by Israelis. And I had a contract of that sort, and so I'm challenging that law. Got some great ACLU attorneys from New York City and Phoenix, and one thing is, it's really clear is boycotts are a constitutional speech right. I mean, that was defined long ago by the U.S. Supreme Court, peaceful right to boycott. And the Supreme Court has said that you can't do a political litmus test when you hand out government contracts. Right. And that's what this is. If you can prevent this, then there's nothing to stop the legislature from passing a law saying we won't contract with anybody that boycotts, say, Trump family businesses, or boycotts people who support the Democratic Party, it basically punishes certain types of speech, and it gives away why we would give away portions of our First Amendment to a foreign country. I do not know. But
now, why was there no legislation like this when the boycott against South Africa? And for younger folks, I mean, the boycott against South Africa was a major contributor to South Africa becoming a much more democratic republic. They have a ton of problems now, but it did contribute to them rethinking their situation, releasing Nelson Mandela.
At least the end of apartheid. It, you know, may not solve all their problems, but it ended that.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, unfortunately, I guess nobody dreamed that up. So, but there are 21 such states that have adopted laws like this. And there's even an effort in the U.S. Congress to criminalize support of boycotts in this context, with up to 20 years in prison. If in response to a call from an international body, it might be the UN, it might be the EU, it might be the Palestinian Authority, it might be. And basically my own personal interest, I mean, my parents lived on the West Bank for a year. I was there for quite some time earlier on. And then my son and I had promised him after his bar mitzvah for a long time that we would go over there. And we went finally in the spring.
Wow.
And, very troubled by what we saw on the West Bank. You know, it's just a horrible situation. And if there's to be any hope for a two-state solution, it will never happen as long as, you know, the colonial effort, Israeli colonial effort, continues.
There's something called the BDS movement.
Right.
And it's the reason I ask about it is most people don't even know it exists. Mm-hmm. It's a very small movement. How does what you're doing relate to the BDS movement, which is boycott
divestment and sanctions?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm not boycotting Israel. I'm boycotting the products that would be, you know, produced by settlements or companies that are perpetuating the occupation. There's the BDS movement is a broader type of thing that I don't necessarily agree with, which is, against Israel itself.
It's for treating Israel like South Africa was treated, boycotting
the
country. And it even goes into academia where they want American academics not to go to Israel and vice versa. It's very, very controversial and has a very, very few supporters, but it is out there. And I think probably most folks listening to us have never heard of it. I hadn't heard of it until a year or so ago.
Well, it's gaining traction. And when my son and I were in Jerusalem, we had dinner, lovely person who is an academic in the Hebrew Union College and a Jewish man living in Jerusalem. He was American previously and immigrated back. He was against the academic boycott. He was saying that, well, most of your academics are pretty liberal and would be in favor of Palestinian academics, but I guess the countervailing view is, well, Palestinian academics can't travel abroad. Often they're prohibited by the occupation, and yeah. they don't have access. And so, but I'm not so sure I believe in that. But
that may be true. It's yeah. a very complicated,
yeah,
complicated
hugely.
Issue. But you're sticking to really to the free speech rights. You have a right to boycott
right. Right.
places on the West Bank without the government denying yeah. you contracts to represent prisoners
right.
in a jail, right?
Well, I want to be clear. I don't want to spend a nickel more on those settlements because they're an obstruction to peace. It's so clear. And as a taxpayer, we're all paying, what is it, $40 billion over the next 10 years? And
that's
not,
right, exactly that.
Not conditioning any of that money on a stop to the colonization.
By the way, which is $10 million a day, in case you're doing the math. Yeah. yeah.
And I think we should do like what we did with, and we have every right to be involved because of so much money going there. The same thing with Egypt, I think, is now the, I think probably the only Trump administration thing I like that they've done is they've taken away some of the aid to Egypt because of their gross human rights abuses.
And, yeah, that's a very difficult topic, how the United States responds to human rights abuses in all these countries. And
yeah.
the thing that I think that for people like Mike and I have been kicking around for a long time is the hypocrisy of American policy is just yeah. astonishing.
Yeah. Well, that's right. always yeah. the Middle East quagmire, you know.
The
Egypt, you know, has this blind, more or less blind support of the U.S. for so long, and Mubarak was such a dictator, and yet... And then, and of course, the Arab Spring came and went in Egypt without the American help that some people felt that they should have had, and on and on and on. And then the whole boycott idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have an app on my phone that's called Boycott, and it has now, and it's not updated as much as it should be, I think, because of the 21 states. That wherever the laws are, in other words, it's a liberal app and it's telling me what the Koch brothers own, mm-hmm. and what not to buy. You know,
watch out, you might get legislated out of the state
so
here.
So I need you to be able to. I still want to know not to buy Angel Soft toilet paper. I still want to know Brawny paper towels are made by Koch Brother Industries.
I need that app.
I know.
So let's ask Klaus. Klaus is an immigrant. You immigrated from Germany to the U.S., what, 40 years ago? Lived
yes,
here
actually,
all your life, 52 really?
52 years ago.
52 years ago. So what do you think of this? Do you have any kind of – you've lived here so long, you probably just have an American perspective on this, or do you have any insight from coming from another culture originally anyway?
Well, my perspective is that, America today is very different from the country I emigrated to enthusiastically in 1965. And it saddens me. I mean, like, it saddens all of us what's going to happen and how the Trump administration, which didn't even have a majority of the vote, is institutionalizing things that will haunt us for a long time to come.
What do you think is the worst thing happening? You see Mick struggling to try to keep an area for free speech and civil discussion. What do you see as the most troubling thing that's going on now?
Well, it depends what day of the week it is. They always come... They'll come up with something worse, but I think one of the biggest issues is the tax bill, right? How they manage to sell people to sell their constituents that this is a good thing is absolutely beyond me, because the middle class does not benefit. Their taxes will actually go up, and it benefits the 1%, it's just horrible. And add to that, the other one is health, of course. Their desire to abolish Obamacare, and Medicaid, which has helped millions of people stay healthy. I mean, those are the two big ones in my view, but I'm afraid there's going to be more.
Let me ask Mick to change direction, because I hear that, and that's kind of thinking what Mike and I are most concerned about are those two issues. What about someone we've got like Roy Moore, who's running for office in Alabama? Mm-hmm. And taking aside whether he's guilty or innocent, and I mean, I think he's obviously guilty, the discourse is so toxic about the whole issue. Can the law do anything with that? I mean, we don't have libel laws here. And so you can say pretty much anything about it anyway. He can call the women liars and say it's ritual denunciations, which is a reference to actually suggesting sort of witchcraft on their part. I mean,
actually, we do have libel laws, and every state will have defamation or libel. And in fact, President Trump is being sued right now by one of the people that had allegations against him for sexual improprieties. And she's not suing for the original act. She's suing for the defamation when he called her a liar. And, people do face consequences if their speech is, defamatory. Of course, I'm not sure that's going to be a tough case, to take on.
We have libel laws. What Steve meant to say was that we have libel, but they're so hard to prove. It's so hard in this day and age, so many people say so many.
There's almost no libel legislation that works. There was the one thing that eliminated one of the a guy with massive amount of money from Silicon Valley shut down one of the kind of disreputable websites that said something that they couldn't prove. Sued them basically into submission. I don't know what I don't know whether it was a legal result. That's the other thing, Mick, is that some people are able to put so much money behind their legal activity that people don't have much of a chance to deal with them unless there's something like the ACLU or these other groups.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things about the American system of law that I think is just so bad. It's the worst thing about it is that money really helps in terms of law and getting the judgments that you want. Is if you have some financial backing or the backing of an organization, the laws, the rules of procedure are so complicated the ordinary person can't figure them out.
That's key, and what we're talking about this morning, and that's part of it. Part of the strategy, as far as I'm, part of the right wing strategy, part of the Republican strategy is to makes there's so many fronts and it's so expensive that you know the ACLU and Mick Jordahl, who we're talking to this morning, has to choose their cases because they can't do of them.
Right.
There are so many that the right wing has as far as damage American life on so many fronts, as Claus said. The country that he came to enthusiastically in 65 is a far cry from the country that we live in 2017. And we know who to blame. I'm sorry. There's lots of reasons for that change.
So the issue Claus has raised, there's nothing the law can do about those, like just having this preposterous tax cut that just benefits the wealthy. There's no legal recourse to this.
I think you got to take it to the ballot box. You really do if you want change there. I'm not sure I know of any legal challenge to tax preferences enunciated by Congress, but
don't think there are. My point is that that there's a limit to what the law can do.
There is.
Otherwise, it has
and also
to be.
about speech. We talk about alternative facts, and people can say basically almost whatever they want. They can invent things, but that's part of the price of the First Amendment. It's putting up with it too. So, once you start criminalizing people's false speech. Then we don't have much left of the First Amendment. So it's tough,
I don't think anybody on the left is advocating criminalization, but the whole idea of fake news. Now, when you make money, it's one thing for Claus or Mick Jordahl or Mike Costantino to say something that isn't true, but I think it's a whole nother thing to have a news organization or with somebody pretending, like Fox News, pretending to be a news organization and to spread false information about a tax code. So there's your legal way in. You have these people intentionally lying, intentionally spreading. And that, by the way, as we know, is what's happening. Sinclair, Rudolph,
Sinclair Broadcasting Murdoch. Very, very conservative. Right. Alphos bought more and more radio and television.
So nobody will know the truth about the tax cuts. That's how answers closet. Yeah. How can people support this? They support it because they're told that the other side is lying about
the monopoly on information is getting worse. And I think that what we're saying is that the only remedy for that is keeping our free speech so that we can at least criticize it and at least address it. I mean, I don't know what we expect from the law. Like I said, when I was young, the law was a hero, you know, and now the Supreme Court is stacked. So much of the country seems less democratic than it was when Kloss arrived here 52 years ago.
But to take it full circle, we started, Beck started saying on the show that, you know, I'm glad to live in America. Nothing else. We have this Bill of Rights. And by the way, one is free speech. And by the way, I'm involved in a lot of litigation that defines the boundaries of free speech. Well, I had a guest on the show, a journalist from California, from Sacramento. And he just thought our recipe here, a democratic perspective, this show should be replicated. He thought this was the, what a, because we're doing this inexpensively. First of all, going back to ask the owner of the station, he'll be glad to tell you this is real inexpensive. And, as far as he's concerned, but, the idea is we have all of this free speech going on right here. We can say pretty much what we want, except for seven words that is still,
What are the seven words?
What was it?
Will cost him his license, or at least the.
Hey, Mike, how many fingers am I holding up? We're doing a truth contest here.
I'm not falling into that one.
All right.
Yeah. Well, I think
sum it up for us, Mick. We need to thank some of our sponsors, Democrats of the Red Rocks. Breakfast coming up. They've got three candidates, two statewide candidates, and
Bobby Tyler was a guest on the show, and the mine inspector, which everybody wants to know who the mine inspector is. Why is
the mine inspector very important?
Yeah, there you go.
We will be interviewing the mine inspector.
It's a job
candidate.
I'm looking for.
Yeah, it is the only job in Arizona that has a requirement of a certain degree.
That's right.
And you have to have a degree in mining and be a mining engineer.
I wish we had that for the Board of Regents.
Exactly.
December 21st. Steve Zegner, El Portal, for support, for our fundraiser. All the people who contribute to Democratic Perspective, we really want to thank you. Without your contributions, we would not be here 6 years later, going on 7 years
in
April.
Right? It's hard to believe. You think we know how to do it by now. One of the things, the people we never thank, and there's reasons for that, but we never thank Tom Tabak and this crew in this station that keeps us, that lets us walk through the door. He even gave me a cup of water this morning.
I have never seen him in 6 years. I've never seen him come up with a cup of water before.
It was a grudge.
Grudging cup of water.
He's flashing grudgingly over the, through them, Okay, well, but here we are. We're going to thank you anyway, Tom, no matter what.
And we ought to thank our regular contributors like Bill Timmerman and Brushwood and Richard Searle. These people contribute monthly to Democratic Perspective. They help us keep going, and we have gone. Nobody thought we were going to be able to do this, Mike. We started out. We were a 15-minute show. We did double interviews. Really? We had to spread it to two different shows.
I do want to say happy birthday to one of our biggest fans. Margaret had a birthday party and she, every time I see her in one of the local restaurants in Old Town Cottonwood, she grabs my, pulls me down and gives me a review of the show. As does Cactus Kate, but Kate's is not as positive as Margaret's. Margaret is just full of the thrill that we have a First Amendment and that a show like Democratic Perspective is on the air. I know this is a little. My arm is getting tired from slapping.
You keep pointing to your earballs or something. I don't know. But we want to thank Mick Jordahl for coming in, and we need to have you in again, Mick. There's an important article and a couple of days ago in the Arizona Republic that explains the issue that we're talking about in detail, which is a free speech issue. It's not whether you even support the boycott or not.
Right. Don't forget, folks, you can listen to this show and all our shows on VVID.org. Our shows are podcasts on VVID.org.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.